Spotlighting Maine's business advisors who build their practice through collaboration. This is AceCast. Now, here are your hosts, team experience designer Kim Dakin-Neal and business efficiency strategist Priscilla Hansen-Mahoney.
Broadcasting from Portland, Maine, thank you for tuning into AceCast. I'm Priscilla Hansen-Mahoney.
And I'm Kim Dakin-Neal.
Kim, you had the pleasure of interviewing Bob Catan of Interpersonal Communication Consulting. Bob is a member of ACE and a communication expert.
He is.
And he's also written a book and a workbook. Do you know what I mean?
It's a great title.
And Kim, I cheated. I listened to a preview of your interview, and I have to say, what an interesting conversation revolving around communication. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, we could go back and forth on that. And what a fascinating conversation we had. Bob is so knowledgeable, and I really love the point he makes about how his multilingual upbringing forced him to focus on the communication that was going on underneath the words.
You know, Kim, that story brought back memories for me as well, because my grandmother only spoke Danish around us kids when she was talking to the neighbors.
Oh.
So we didn't know what she was saying. And it was so interesting how he turned a similar experience into a career.
Yeah.
You know, he has so many knowledge bombs about interpersonal and interpersonal communication.
I like that. Knowledge bombs. He has a lot of them, so we better start setting them off now.
Yes, and without further ado, Kim Dakin-Neal and Bob Catan.
So it's my pleasure today to be talking to Bob Catan, Interpersonal Communication Consulting. Bob has been around for quite some time. He's got a fabulous book and workbook that he's put together. And we're going to be talking to Bob about what makes his particular practice unique and how ACE membership amplifies his business. And I also have to start out by saying that Bob comes quite a long distance in order to attend the ACE meetings. So he obviously finds value in this. He comes all the way from Ellsworth, is that correct?
That's correct. And there are many mornings when I'm leaving at 4:30 and I think, why am I doing this? and it's obvious because I come home every time and I'm energized and I say to my wife, this is a real peer group for me and I've been looking for a peer group for many, many years and feeling a sense of isolation. So what I get out of ACE is worth a lot to me.
Thank you so much. So regarding your practice, Interpersonal Communication Consulting, how did you become interested in communication in particular?
Well, you know, I didn't really have to think about that too much because I think there was something very natural about it for me. But when I was writing the book, I had to ask myself a lot of questions like, why am I doing this and how did I get interested and what's important to me? What do I really want to be doing here? And it led to some reflections. And one of them is I grew up in a bicultural, bilingual family.
Really?
And all of my grandparents were born in Armenia. And so there were these two languages being spoken at home. And often grandparents, aunts and uncles, even our parents would speak to us in Armenian. We would respond in English.
Okay.
And often they would speak a more advanced level of Armenian so we couldn't understand. So being in this kind of unique environment, you really had to pay attention carefully.
Yes.
And I was very curious, some would say nosy, to know what was going on all the time. And so in a way, I think it predisposed me to having to look at a broader range of communication, not just the words, but a whole other range of factors that really conveyed what was going on. And so I think in some ways that was a major contributor to fleshing out this interest I have in communication.
Sure. So you couldn't rely on language skills alone. You
That's
had to
right.
really hone in on facial expression, body language, The nuances of conversation and communication and the tone,
yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, all those factors in voice. I am very auditorily sensitive, so, you know, pitch, rhythm, melody,
yes.
All of those factors that really communicate so much to all of us, to some of us more than
yes.
others, and that actually will be a segue into talking about the communication styles framework that I've developed.
Exactly, that's where I was going next. Let's talk about that a little bit.
I think whenever anybody develops some method or system, it comes from your own experience, from trying to understand yourself more deeply and to help yourself to be better in whatever ways you aspire to be better. I had a lot of questions about myself that I was trying to answer, ways that I was making sense of the world, and in fact, what happened as a result of that is I had an evaluation that uncovered a few different learning disabilities. And
really?
So that was new information, and in my discovery process became very important in understanding how I worked with myself better. And of course, that led to how I could work with others better. And for me, that translated into understanding the natural language of the individual. So I had a counseling practice at the time.
Sure.
And I would watch people interacting and get into all kinds of snags and snarls that were not necessarily driven by something on a deeper level, the emotional dynamics or other factors, but was purely the result of them not getting the message. I could watch that, feel that, see that, hear that happening. And it was a curious phenomenon to me, and I spent a lot of time clarifying communication. And that got me very curious as to what was going on a deeper level in terms of the natural language that each of us speaks, and how, if we understand that more deeply, the nuances of it, we can anticipate better the impact we're likely to have on other people, and therefore develop some tools, very concrete tools, to foresee that and have better connected, understandable communication.
Now, this overlaps for me in my understanding with both learning styles that came into play a couple decades ago and also some Myers-Briggs. Sounds like there's some flavors in there. And when
yes.
I read some pieces in your book, it reminded me of some of the interpersonal, intrapersonal things that you go through.
Yes.
Collisions between introverts and extroverts.
Yes.
And I know in some of your speeches that I've heard you do, your fabulous presentations, you have given us examples of your own relationship with your wife, her being an introvert, you being more of an extrovert, and I could totally relate because in my marriage, we've got that introvert-extrovert thing going on as well.
Okay, and here's the twist on the introvert-extrovert
yes.
thing that I think I've discovered helps a lot of people in understanding themselves and their relationships. So the Myers-Briggs, the one axis there is about introverts-extroverts.
Sure.
And in the model that I've developed, there's the interpersonal and the intrapersonal. So, I am a social introvert. If I go into a social situation, I'm going to be, kind of hugging the wall, finding one person to talk to, quietly having a good conversation, and leave. My wife will be more inclined to enjoy meeting different people and having various conversations. She's energized by that. I am depleted by that. Now, here's the connection. Myers-Briggs says, if you are if you think out loud, you're an extrovert. Well, I think out loud. So even though I'm a social introvert, I am very verbal. I think out loud. I need a high level of engagement with a number of people in order to make sense of my experience. My wife is more intrapersonally attuned and more of a social extrovert, so she needs to go inward to discover her clarity before being able to engage in a more meaningful kind of conversation.
Yes.
So if you think about thinking out loud and thinking internally, and you start to look at relationships, you see that playing out all over the place. Now, I work with a lot of leaders in organizations, And this dynamic of understanding the interpersonal and the intrapersonal is very important, because the leaders who tend to be more interpersonal, thinking out loud, they look for a high level of engagement with people.
Yes.
Those who are more intrapersonally driven will be doing much more internally, respecting much more the autonomy of people, giving people more space, incubating ideas internally before connecting. So if I'm the leader that loves the engagement, I'm going to be going around and talking to people a lot. And that's going to work for some people, but not for everyone. So if I'm the interpersonal leader and I'm engaging with people a lot, there'll be some confusion because they won't know where I'm coming from. Am I just thinking out loud because I need to make sense of my experience? Am I inadvertently giving a message? Are they getting marching orders in a certain way? Am I insecure because I'm saying things that are quite divergent and diverse? It's easy to misunderstand in the reverse way that it's easy to misunderstand the leader who's more internal in the intrapersonal way. They incubate ideas and then they say, well, listen, I've been thinking about this and here's what I think we should do. And people can feel disenfranchised from the person who has that type of leadership style.
Sure. I would imagine that this also comes into play with succession, when you go from one leader to another and you have divergent leadership styles, interpersonal versus intrapersonal. And what you just described can be very common, and people take these communication snafus personally. They feel left out of the conversation. You're just making these decisions unilaterally when we're used to working as a team.
And that's what brings me back to the concept of impact. Actually, I'll give you a quick example.
Yes.
This was with a management team, and the CEO in the group acknowledged being the kind of person who needs to incubate things. And people were saying basically, yeah, and we often feel left out, and it feels like you're just imposing something on us. And even though you say you want to hear from us, it looks pretty fully formed.
Right.
And so it feels like a double message. And he was devastated by that because that was not his intention. So they worked out this simple system of having a whiteboard in the staff room. When he was incubating a new idea, he would make a circle or some kind of squiggle, mm-hmm. and he'd write a couple of words in it that gave people a heads up that he was incubating an idea. And then he would start to put in some touchstones as things started to formulate for him. And other people would write a question. And they did this all on the whiteboard.
Wow.
In a way that was very quiet and didn't disturb the process. And then at the right time, they got together and had the real conversation that accounted for all of that. So a very simple way that people come to problem solve when they start to understand what's going on with each other from another point of view.
Yes, and you came up with a simple visual there.
That's right.
A visual means for people to contribute and feel like their voices were being heard.
That's right. So I was going to say, what this really gets to on a deeper level is how we process information.
Yeah.
And so the central idea here is that how we process information is directly related to how we communicate, because communication and learning, if we borrow on learning style theory, is about how we're taking things in.
Yes.
And I call it whole body absorption or listening, and how we express ourselves. When we understand our strengths and weaknesses in terms of how we're absorbing information, and therefore how it drives our communication style, we're much more intentional about using our strengths and accounting better for the weaknesses or the ways that we would tend to get into trouble. So let me also say that, I talk about communication tools a lot. So the best communication tool I have for myself,
yes,
the simplest one is I add in conversation regularly the parenthetical phrase, oh, I'm just thinking out loud here.
Sure.
And when I do that kind of quickly, parenthetically,
yes,
I watch people's bodies relax, because I talk a lot, I'm very verbal, I think out loud, I say a lot of complicated things that can seem oppositional almost at times,
yes,
to what I've just said a moment ago, because I'm trying to make sense of my experience externally. So if they know I'm thinking out loud, they don't have to become anxious about what's required of them.
Yes.
You know, am I looking for ideas?
Right.
Do I need some problem solving? Do I need emotional support? What's going on here? So when you set the context, so someone, for example, who pictures things really strongly and in detail can say, give me a second here. I'm just trying to visualize what you're saying and how things relate. People just intuitively understand that and get it. They're patient with it, and they'll help you to illuminate the picture, for example.
And this brings us to, I like the delineations that you come up with in your book around how we process, the visual versus the verbal versus the kinesthetic. You have a really nice way of putting that into the context that you're talking about now. So, for instance, when you produce the whiteboard application that really speaks to people who are trying to picture it and visualize.
Right.
I'm curious if there were other people who found that a little distracting and disturbing, and if visual was not going to work for a particular team, what would you then come up with as a way to provide this mutual communication idea brainstorming place?
Good question. And I think when people are working together, as this group was, they come up with their own solutions that are tailor-made to their particular needs.
That requires taking the time up front.
That's right.
To find the solution where everybody's going to have buy-in.
Yes. I want to add something that's important just in terms of the framework here to clarify. You know, a lot of models around communication styles define very clearly, you know, you're this, you're that, you're a combination of this and that. And this model says that there are as many communication styles as there are individuals, because the seven dimensions, we've talked about four or five of them here, they are active in all of us all the time. It's just a matter of degree and what your strongest muscles or lenses are. So for me, the interpersonal is very strong.
Right.
The auditory is very strong.
Yeah.
And the kinesthetic is very strong.
Yes.
And so when we look at those in combination, for me, you may have the same three strengths, but it's going to be different because you're a different person. And the connections that are made on a brain level are going to be your unique connections to those and your experience. So we can't pigeonhole people.
Right. And that we're all a really interesting combination of those three.
That's
and
right.
I'm hearkening back to a conversation we had previously today about how you're more comfortable in a recording audio type of situation, like you have some radio in your background, whereas television, visual videos, that kind of means of communication, you're not quite so comfortable with. And when you describe yourself as an interpersonal auditory kinesthetic, that makes total sense to me. Because
it fits with that.
Right? It's hard for you to stay still. The camera wants you to stay still. It's hard for you to look into a lens when there's no human face there.
Yeah.
So it is. It's really fascinating.
And this interpersonal engagement that we're having,
right,
that's what energizes me. I sometimes will sort of say with some humor, but some truth, that I'm a little bit inert unless I have somebody to interact with, and then my brain opens up and I become more creative and engaged. I'm not going to go sit in a room as a general rule and become creative and engaged.
Exactly. I'd like you to speak to the question that I asked you this morning about how a book, a product, a workbook amplifies your business as a solo practitioner, as a consultant.
Yes, I think there are two parts to that answer, actually.
Okay, before you answer.
Yes.
My reason for putting this into the mix is because a lot of people will grapple with whether it's worthwhile to put a book out there, seeing as how we're going to e-books, we're going to the internet for practically all of our information. So you had said that this really helps you, and I'd love for other people to hear your reasons why.
Sure. Well, first and foremost, the process of going through it is so arduous and
yes,
tedious, because it forces you to think very clearly about every single thought, feeling, idea, word. And in that process, as difficult and arduous as that is, it really does hone your thinking. I had to be very precise about what this was about. I'd been using it for years.
Sure.
And it almost felt so natural that I didn't even think about it in the way that it's integrated into my work.
Yes.
But having to put it on paper really got me to be precise about it and to think it through carefully and to really hone some things much more sharply than I had before. So in terms of my own clarity and effectiveness, it helped me elevate my game, so to speak. That's first. There's a second part to that, and I don't think it's a good idea to write a book for credibility, you know.
Yes.
If there isn't something there that's really an idea that really you want to share, because there's something, it doesn't have to be brand new, but it has to be an angle on something
some
that has
depth.
Value. And
that's
not just,
right.
not just when people say, oh, it's great, you have this calling card to give, and it's impressive that you've written a book. And it's like, well, I get that, I understand that, but you really have to want to do it for the right reasons too, not just as a calling card, but it is a calling card. When people see that I have written a book, it adds a level of credibility that I've put something together that has some substance and depth to it.
That's right, and you've thought it through.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's not just interesting ideas in application.
It's
also interesting ideas that have a structure and have content and have a way to make clear the concept and how it works and how you apply
That's
it.
That's right. So for me, the concept of the book are part of my organization of one. It really
sure.
adds a strong dimension to what I'm offering to people.
So the other question I wanted to ask you about that is, if you came up against, in writing this book, any of your communication styles that perhaps were not as strong, did you have to strengthen one of your own communication learning styles in order to produce this book?
So, first of all, one of my learning disabilities is in sequencing.
Okay.
And so it shows up in writing. So
sure.
I can write something, everything is there, but it's not in the right order.
Okay.
And so it was very challenging for me to have to understand that and work with that concept.
Okay.
Number one. And so I needed a lot of help from people who had better linguistic skills. My verbal linguistic skills are strong. My written linguistic skills are not strong.
Okay.
My logical processing is not strong because of the sequencing
sure.
part of it.
Sure.
And so I needed to bring in people who I could talk to, who could read things, who could help me to shape this.
Who were strong in that
That's
particular
right.
skill.
And that gets back to the whole workplace issue and using this in the workplace. When people who work together know the strengths and weaknesses
yes.
of each other, they draw on those naturally.
Yes.
And it makes a huge difference. And it gets to people's natural talents, too.
Sure.
And what their strongest contributions are. Well, we're interacting with each other on average about 60% of the day. The average person, average amount of time. And for some of us, it's more than that.
Yeah.
And there's so much engagement with others. It's a complex process, and there's a way we take it for granted because it's so ordinary.
Yes.
And yet, on the other hand, we know how complicated it is and how easy it is to get into a snag. That's about greater self-awareness. And that's a lot of what happens with this model, is it increases our self-awareness.
And I think also what you're doing in your work is increasing our sense of respect for communication and how we communicate.
Yes, just to respect the process of communication, in a way, makes you more curious and humble. And though I sometimes call those communication skills with a twinkle in my eye, because there's something, if you think about it, of remaining curious and humble that, if you do that all the time in dealing with other people, it's pretty hard not to have a good outcome.
Exactly. Plus, you get to be a lifelong learner.
That's right.
Bob, I have learned an enormous amount in this interview time today, and I've enjoyed this immensely.
Well, it's a pleasure talking with you. Thank you.
Where do I start, Kim? That was one lesson on communication after another.
Mm-hmm.
And how interesting just the way we process information affects our communication with others.
Yeah, I think one of the things I was reminded about is how important it is to know and to claim your communication style and to let others know so that they can communicate with you and vice versa, especially in a leadership position.
I love that. I'm just thinking out loud and how it puts everybody at ease.
That's right.
I'm definitely going to start doing that. And while I'm just thinking out loud, I just want to make sure that our listeners have the opportunity to grab Bob's book, Do You Know What I Mean?
And the workbook.
And the workbook. And they can be purchased directly from his website, Robert Catayan, or on Amazon.com. And let me spell Catayan for you. It's Robert, K-E-T-E-Y-I-A-N.com.
You can also reach Bob through the Association for Consulting Expertise at consultexpertise.com. And Priscilla, up next, you have Jim Milliken of Jim Milliken Consulting, and he is going to be a treat.
Yes, I am really looking forward to that interview and just learning more about Jim. To hear more great interviews from our members, please visit the Association for Consulting Expertise at consultexpertise.com. We'll be right back.